Welcome to the second podcast for Narration by George. Good day to you. I'm George Taylor. This is the podcast of audiobooks and spiritual ideas, along with a few surprises. Today I want to spend some time talking with the protagonist from one of my newest and latest releases, A Christmas Carol. Yes, we're going to talk to Ebenezer Scrooge. And how do we do that, you ask? Well, you know, it's purely in the world of imagination. Scrooge is, of course, the character who starts out in A Christmas Carol as an old curmudgeon who believes Christmas to be a humbug. After meeting with four spirits, he changes his tune and is a different man. It's a story which, although it takes place during the Christmas season, is a story of redemption that is important and valuable at any season. So let's meet Ebenezer Scrooge.
Good day, Mr. Taylor.
Good day, Mr. Scrooge.
Please, call me Ebenezer. I noticed that in this day and time people usually use their first names, unlike in my day. We were very formal, you know.
Indeed. So how does it feel to be a celebrity some 100 years plus after Dickens wrote your story?
Celebrity? I never would have dreamed it, but it does show what a change of heart can really mean in the world, in anyone's world, yours or mine, doesn't it? I started thinking of Christmas as a humbug, and now I celebrate Christmas all year long, as I promised.
So how do you celebrate Christmas now, here in January?
Well, you remember Tiny Tim? Well, he was so sickly when I first met him. That very first January, I took him to my very own physician and started treatments for his condition right away, at my expense, I might add. And I've continued that to this very, well, I was going to say to this very day, but of course Tiny Tim is no longer tiny. He grew to be a strong man and a physician himself. Of course, this being 2015, he no longer lives. But I was glad to help him through medical college, yes, indeed.
That's an impressive change, Ebenezer.
There's more, but I really don't want to talk about it. That is such a public display, you know. But I'm still keeping Christmas, even by talking with you, young man.
Well, I'm not that young, but I appreciate the compliment. So tell me, what was the scariest part of your experience?
The scariest? Why, at the beginning, when Marley showed himself to me. There was his face on the knocker, and his presence in my room shortly thereafter made me shiver.
Whew. I have an excerpt from that beginning. Mind if we listen to it?
By all means. You know, I do go back and reread my own story. I'll be interested to hear your take on my happenings.
Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large. It is also a fact that Scrooge had seen it night and morning during his whole residence in that place. Also that Scrooge had as little of what is called fancy about him as any man in the city of London, even including, which is a bold word, the corporation, aldermen, and livery. Let it also be borne in mind that Scrooge had not bestowed one thought on Marley since his last mention of his 7 years dead partner that afternoon. And then let any man explain to me, if he can, how it happened that Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, saw in the knocker, without its undergoing any intermediate process of change, not a knocker, but Marley's face. Marley's face. It was not an impenetrable shadow as the other objects in the yard were, but had a dismal light about it, like a bad lobster in a dark cellar. It was not angry or ferocious, but looked at Scrooge as Marley used to look, with ghostly spectacles turned up on its ghostly forehead. The hair was curiously stirred as if by breath or hot air, and though the eyes were wide open, they were perfectly motionless. That and its livid color made it horrible, but its horror seemed to be in spite of the face and beyond its control, rather than a part of its own expression. As Scrooge looked fixedly at this phenomenon, it was a knocker again. To say that he was not startled, or that his blood was not conscious of a terrible sensation to which it had been a stranger from infancy, would be untrue. But he put his hand upon the key he had relinquished, turned it sturdily, walked in, and lighted his candle. He did pause with a moment's irresolution before he shut the door, and he did look cautiously behind it first, as if he half expected to be terrified with the sight of Marley's pigtail sticking out into the hall. But there was nothing on the back of the door except the screws and nuts that held the knocker on. So he said, "Pooh-pooh," and closed it with a bang. After several turns, he sat down again. As he threw his head back in the chair, his glance happened to rest upon a bell, a disused bell that hung in the room and communicated for some purpose now forgotten with a chamber in the highest story of the building. It was with great astonishment and with a strange, inexplicable dread that as he looked, he saw this bell begin to swing. It swung so softly in the outset that it scarcely made a sound, but soon it rang out loudly, and so did every bell in the house. This might have lasted half a minute or a minute, but it seemed like an hour. The bells ceased as they had begun, together. They were succeeded by a clanking noise deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain over the casks in the wine merchant's cellar. Scrooge then remembered to have heard that ghosts in haunted houses were described as dragging chains. The cellar door flew open with a booming sound, and then he heard the noise much louder on the floors below, then coming up the stairs, then coming straight towards his door. "It's humbug still," said Scrooge. "I won't believe it." His color changed, though, when without a pause it came on through the heavy door and passed into the room before his eyes. Upon its coming in, the dying flame leapt up as though it cried, "I know him, Marley's ghost," and fell again. The same face, the very same. Marley in his pigtail, usual waistcoat, tights and boots, the tassels on the latter bristling like his pigtail and his coat skirts and the hair upon his head. The chain he drew was clasped about his middle. It was long and wound about him like a tail. And it was made, for Scrooge observed it closely, of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. His body was transparent, so that Scrooge, observing him and looking through his waistcoat, could see the two buttons on his coat behind. Scrooge had often heard it said that Marley had no bowels, but he had never believed it until now. No, nor did he believe it even now, though he looked like the phantom through and through and saw it standing before him, though he felt the chilling influence of its death-cold eyes and marked the very texture of the folded kerchief bound about its head and chin, which wrapper he had not observed before. He was still incredulous and fought against his senses. "How now?" said Scrooge, caustic and cold as ever. "What do you want with me?"
"Much,"
Marley's voice, no doubt about it. "Who are you?"
"Ask me who I was."
"Who were you, then?" said Scrooge, raising his voice. "You're particular for a shade." He was going to say, "to a shade," but substituted this as more appropriate.
"In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley."
Can you sit down?" asked Scrooge, looking doubtfully at him.
"I can."
"Do it, then." Scrooge asked the question because he didn't know whether a ghost so transparent might find himself in a condition to take a chair. and it might involve the necessity of an embarrassing explanation. But the ghost sat down on the opposite side of the fireplace as if he were quite used to it.
"You don't believe in me,"
observed the ghost. "I don't," said Scrooge.
"What evidence would you have of my reality beyond that of your senses?"
"I don't know," said Scrooge.
"Why do you doubt your senses?"
"Because," said Scrooge, "a little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them cheats. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of an underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are."
"I think I'm shivering all over again, sir. You've done the story wonderfully."
"Thank you, sir. That wasn't the only scary moment, though."
"No? What else? When the first specter came to me, the ghost of Christmas past. He was such a strange and small fellow. It was the first time that I've ever flown. I didn't know a man could do such a thing."
"Were the other specters scary?"
"Not really. I welcomed the other two. Although the ghost of Christmas future was scary, just because he would not talk with me. I had to guess what he was trying to tell me, and when he showed me my grave, well..."
A churchyard. Here, then, the wretched man whose name he had now to learn lay underneath the ground. It was a worthy place. Walled in by houses, overrun by grass and weeds, the growth of vegetation's death, not life. Choked up with too much burying, fat with repleted appetite. A worthy place. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one. He advanced towards it, trembling. The phantom was exactly as it had been, but he dreaded that he saw new meaning in its solemn shape. "Before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point," said Scrooge, "answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they shadows of things that may be only?" Still the ghost pointed downward to the grave by which it stood. "Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends, to which, if persevered in, they must lead," said Scrooge. "But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me." The spirit was immovable as ever.
Scrooge crept toward it, trembling as he went,
and following the finger, read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name. Ebenezer Scrooge. "Am I that man who lay upon the bed?" he cried upon his knees. The finger pointed from the grave to him and back again.
"No, spirit! Oh, no! No!"
The finger was still there. "Spirit," he cried, tight clutching at its robe, "hear me. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been but for this intercourse. Why show me this if I am past all hope?" For the first time the hand appeared to shake. "Good spirit," he pursued as down upon the ground he fell before it. "Your nature intercedes for me and pities me. Assure me that I may yet change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life."
The kind hand trembled.
"I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me, I may sponge away the writing on this stone."
In his agony, he caught the spectral hand. It sought to free itself, but he was strong in his entreaty and detained it. The spirit, stronger yet, repulsed him. Holding up his hands in a last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost.
What was the best part of the experience? My, there were so many.
Really? You'd think that four ghosts would not allow for good experiences.
But there were. When I relived my past times, particularly the wonderful time of my apprenticeship, and the party at my nephew's house, which I really did get to participate in, those were two of my favorite times.
Let's listen to the time of the apprenticeship.
Yes, let's.
at the sight of an old gentleman in a Welsh wig sitting behind such a high desk that if he had been 2 inches taller he might have knocked his head against the ceiling, Scrooge cried in great excitement. "Why, it's old Fezziwig, bless his heart! It's Fezziwig alive again!" Old Fezziwig laid down his pen and looked up at the clock, which pointed to the hour of 7. He rubbed his hands, adjusted his capacious waistcoat, laughed all over himself from his shoes to his organ of benevolence, and called out in a comfortable, oily, rich, fat, jovial voice, "Yo-ho there, Ebenezer! Dick!" Scrooge's former self, now a grown young man, came briskly in, accompanied by his fellow prentice. "Dick Wilkins, to be sure," said Scrooge to the ghost. "Bless me, yes, there he is. He was very much attached to me, was Dick. Poor Dick, dear, dear."
"Yo-ho, my boys," said Fezziwig. "No more work tonight. Christmas Eve, Dick. Christmas, Ebenezer. Let's have the shutters up,"
cried old Fezziwig with a sharp clap of his hands.
"Before a man can say Jack Robinson."
You wouldn't believe how those two fellows went at it. They charged into the street with the shutters. 1, 2, 3 had 'em up in their places. 4, 5, 6 barred 'em and pinned 'em. 7, 8, 9, and came back before you could have got to 12, panting like racehorses.
"Hilly ho!" cried old Fezziwig, skipping down from the high desk with wonderful agility. "Clear away, my lads, and let's have lots of room here. Hilly-ho, Dick! Cheer up, Ebenezer!"
Clear away. There was nothing they wouldn't have cleared away or couldn't have cleared away with old Fezziwig looking on. It was done in a minute. Every movable was packed off as if it were dismissed from public life forevermore. The floor was swept and watered, the lamps were trimmed, fuel was heaped upon the fire, and the warehouse was as snug and warm and dry and bright a ballroom as you would desire to see upon a winter's night. In came a fiddler with a music book, and went up to the lofty desk, and made an orchestra of it, and tuned like 50 stomach aches. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast, substantial smile. In came the 3 Miss Fezziwigs, beaming and lovable. In came the 6 young followers whose hearts they broke. In came all the young men and women employed in the business. In came the housemaid with her cousin, the baker. In came the cook with her brother's particular friend, the milkman. In came the boy from over the way, who was suspected of not having board enough from his master, trying to hide himself behind the girl from next door, but one who was proved to have had her ears pulled by her mistress. In they all came, one after another, some shyly, some boldly, some gracefully, some awkwardly, some pushing, some pulling. In they all came, anyhow and everyhow. Away they all went, 20 couple at once, hands half round and back again the other way, down the middle and up again, round and round in various stages of affectionate grouping, old top couple always turning up in the wrong place, new top couple starting off again as soon as they got there, all top couples at last and not a bottom one to help them. When this result was brought about, old Fezziwig, clapping his hands to stop the dance, cried out, "Well done!" And the fiddler plunged his hot face into a pot of porter, especially provided for that purpose. But scorning rest upon his reappearance, he instantly began again, though there were no dancers yet, as if the other fiddler had been carried home exhausted on a shutter, and he were a brand new man, resolved to beat him out of sight or perish. There were more dances, and there were forfeits, and more dances, and there was cake, and there was negus, and there was a great piece of cold roast, and there was a great piece of cold boiled, and there were mince pies and plenty of beer. But the great effect of the evening came after the roast and boiled, when the fiddler, an artful dog, mind, the sort of man who knew his business better than you or I could have told it him, struck up Sir Roger de Coverley. Then old Fezziwig stood out to dance with Mrs. Fezziwig, top couple too, with a good stiff piece of work cut out for them. 3 or 4 and 20 pairs of partners, people who were not to be trifled with, people who would dance and had no notion of walking. But if they had been twice as many, 4 times, old Fezziwig would have been a match for them, and so would Mrs. Fezziwig. As to her, she was worthy to be his partner in every sense of the term. If that's not high praise, tell me higher, and I'll use it. A positive light appeared to issue from Fezziwig's calves. They shone in every part of the dance like moons. You couldn't have predicted at any given time what would have become of them next. And when old Fezziwig and Mrs. Fezziwig had gone all through the dance, advance and retire, both hands to your partner, bow and curtsy, corkscrew, thread the needle, and back again to your place, Fezziwig cut. Cut so deftly that he appeared to wink with his legs and came up on his feet again without a stagger. And when the clock struck 11, this domestic ball broke up. Mr. and Mrs. Fezziwig took their stations, one on either side of the door, and shaking hands with every person individually as he or she went out, wished him or her a Merry Christmas. When everybody had retired but the 2 prentices, they did the same to them, and thus the cheerful voices died away, and the lads were left to their beds, which were under a counter in the back shop. During the whole of this time, Scrooge had acted like a man out of his wits. His heart and soul were in the scene, and with his former self. He corroborated everything, remembered everything, enjoyed everything, and underwent the strangest agitation. It was not until now, when the bright faces of his former self and Dick were turned from them, that he remembered the ghost and became conscious that it was looking full upon him while the light upon its head burnt very clear.
Oh, such fun! Well, we're about out of time, Ebenezer. What message would you like to leave for us here in the 21st century? Remember that changes are always possible. If you haven't shared your life with others and helped to improve their time on this earth, then you haven't lived as our Lord would have you. I'm proof that anyone can change their ways. Thank you, Ebenezer. Thank you, young man, for inviting me. So be sure to check out Ebenezer's exciting tale of restoration and redemption in A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Go to my website, narrationbygeorge.com/books. Click on the cover for A Christmas Carol to find out more information, listen to excerpts from the story, and find out how to download the book. It's on sale right now through the end of January for the low price of just $7.99. See you next time for the Narration by George podcast.